aspect, right. Right, well, I haven't mentioned, when we went to school at Oharu, and in later years we went to manual training at Thorndon School, went and a taxi collected us in the afternoon, about lunchtime, and we caught the train down to Thorndon School, to Wellington, then up to Thorndon School, did our manual training, came back. That was a fairly new innovation at that stage. And then we went on to college. I was lucky, Pat and Prue had, and June Gordon had gone a couple of years earlier. And then Jean Gordon and I went there. Our parents, Dad didn't get involved with the Board of Governors there, but he knew some of the people. And I do remember that the Valley held a stall, a produce stall, one fundraising fair. And I remember that they took about the most of any of the stalls in the area, because people were delighted to get fresh meat and produce. Harking back to the modern day farmers' markets, I guess. And then Sue was second year at Onslow College, but Colin Watt was the first headmaster at Onslow, and he had fostered Dad's rugby career. So Dad became involved with Reg Best, and they put up the fences and planted shelter belts of pine trees, now those horrible old things around the bottom field, round Onslow College, because it was such a bare, windswept site. I think he was more a helper than they would call on him for things, but I don't think he was actually on the Board of Governors or school committees or whatever they called them of Onslow. He was just sort of involved on the sidelines. And that was his loyalty to Colin Watt. Colin had obviously, he taught at O'Harrier Valley School at one stage, and he used to take Dad out to rugby. And Dad was quite a good loose forward, I gather, and made the Johnsonville senior team, which Mum said she was always blamed when they got married, the fact that, she had stopped Dad's rugby career. He was 29 then, but of course he had cows to milk. So he couldn't follow that through, but he did, where possible, follow his rugby. And he bought one of the seats in the Millard stand. I remember he sent my sister in with this £100 check. And he always said Prue got a beautiful seat, but the men were so, all these old gents there, they were so keen for this young girl to get a nice seat. So she got a very good seat. And it was lovely, really, because that kept Dad, he was able to be involved with rugby right through till, I think, vice president and all sorts of things on the... he was a supporter of Johnsonville rugby right through, but I don't think he did much on committee-wise, because, it was just too much of a tie, and he had all the other things. But we used to go, and I can remember the rushed milkings, and then we'd get up there before the Millard stand, and we'd stand in the queue. And we always had to watch the last of a rugby game from the top of the steps. And then we would run to the car and get in and beat the traffic home. And part of the payment for going to the rugby match was the fact that we had to help milk that night. And so Dad must have found it lovely when he had a farm worker, and he didn't have to rush the same, and he was able to... use his Millard stand seat, and we kicked with this. I can remember Nick Warner was the farm worker at one stage, and we had to do the same for him, watch from the top of the steps and run and then help milk when we got there. But we would try and park the car sort of quite well down Adelaide Road and then just quick get away.
That was always a thing, eh?
Yes. Now, Dad was a strong national supporter, but he was never really interested in national politics, I don't think. He knew the local MPs. At Oharu, it was really funny. What was that man? Long-standing Labour man who represented O'Hara U Onslow. Colin, I think he was a Colin. But they used to always, all the candidates used to come to the O'Hara U Hall, and although, you know, they were all parties came, but on the whole, the Valley was very staunch national.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would, they could tell you who voted.
Mr. May?
Was it May? Yes. Yes. Anyway, they liked him very much, but they still wouldn't vote for the poor man. And then I'll never forget, Social Credit came and there was one Social Credit vote from the Valley. They always knew who the Labour votes were. I mean, I don't know whether they were right or not, but they always felt they knew who the Labour voters were. But they couldn't get this one Social Creditor. And when we got to voting ages, Pat Prue and I all came to the same time, and Dad took us, made us go to all the candidates' meetings and said, now, forget about us, make up your own mind. And I think, you know, that was, he wanted us to think for ourselves and how we did it. But yes, no, it was, you know, voting in the Valley Hall, it was quite an occasion. Same as anything sort of, yeah, they did make it into an occasion. Anything down at the hall was a bit that way.
Yeah.
And I mean, the hall then was fairly primitive. It was long drops and toilets and a very, the birds used to share the kitchen, so you have to always go down there early and clean up if you had, if you wanted to use the kitchen. You had to give it quite a good scrub out before you could even get started. And oh, you know, I was down there not long ago. And it's such, we were involved with the, we had a table tennis club down at the hall, and we were involved with, we raised a bit of money of something, enough to paint the inside of the hall, because it all used to be dark brown varnished boards. And a colour consultant came, and I can remember, and suggested we do stripes. And we thought this was wonderful, you know, teenagers. We raised the money from one of our barn dancers or something. But I seem to recall that we had, you know, about two stripes down from the, two boards down from the ceiling, there was one colour, and then, you know, another couple of colours, and then with the rest of it was the same, you know, uniform colour. But, yes, this way out colour scheme, which really appealed to us teenagers. But, yes, and they used to have old curtains that were, could be pulled across the stage, and I can remember them just about falling apart and sort of having to resurrect them every time they wanted to do a school concert or use those jolly curtains. Mum, you know, she couldn't get out. During the war and after, we used to have travelling salesmen. And there was this lovely man who came, and he used to say, I think he felt sorry for Mum, he used to put aside dresses that he thought might work, you know, suit her and her size, and I think she always felt compelled to buy them, but usually they were pretty good. But I can remember that man coming with his suitcases. There was a linen man, and but this man had sort of clothing, I think. Yes, I think the Rawley's man came too. That would have all been after the war, and I suppose they were all trying to make a living there. Mum belonged to the women's division, as she didn't belong to a lot. It was Dad who was on all the committees and things. But Mum did belong to the women's division of the Federated Pharmacists. And we had housekeepers. And Mrs. Pawley, the lady, she came several times. We thought she was bossy. She was the friend who got hydated, so that was why Dad was so anti-hydated. We were not allowed to pet the farm dogs. I'm still not a doggy person, not really, because we were just not allowed to touch the dogs, because Mrs. Pawley went from farm to farm, and somewhere or other she picked up hydatids. But she came to us as housekeeper several times because mum, without, you know, family handy, just didn't get a chance to holidays. One year a neighbour came with her three daughters, moved in and looked after the nine girls and the farm worker. And that was, yeah, I mean, that was a brave woman who would do that. But yes, and she got there, and it must have been, I think she said it was for about 10 days or something, 10 days, 2 weeks. I mean, that was pretty hard going. I don't know whether Mary and Viv were there with us. Dad took the little ones. I don't remember. But I do remember that because twins were the same age as June Gordon and Jean, and myself and Anne were around about the same age, and Sue was a bit younger. But yes, Mrs. Gordon sort of just moved in and ran the household. And I remember, probably to get us outside, she had us all going up to pull turnips for the cows, up to the top of the hill with the farm worker. Get rid of us. During the war, Rifle Range Road, I think, is named because of the Americans in the war had a rifle range up there.
Oh.
And I remember Dad saying that there was a lot, you know, sort of astounded them all because they saw all these crates of coke being unloaded. But Dad had a silage pit at the top of the hill, and once he was up there, it must have been during the war, and his brother was there too, and they were digging silage out of the pit onto the horse and car, and suddenly the bullets started flying overhead. They were ricocheting off a solid, they must have been firing at a solid, you know, rock cliff, and the bullets were ricocheting. So these men were trapped in the pit for some hours, evidently. They couldn't get out. They were too frightened to come out. So then I think they had to ask the Americans to please change the angle of their firing range or something so that they could...
White flag.
Or else there was a, you know, they sort of sorted out a time arrangement. But yes, I do remember Uncle Philip being absolutely appalled that he should be stuck in the silage pits for so many hours.
I haven't heard that story yet.
But I think that's where the rifle range name came in.
Yeah.
Because I don't recall that there were that many... Rifle Range Road was... Well, there were shores up there, and I don't think... Oh, and then the Farnhams had a little secluded cottage up there, but apart from that, there was nothing. It was just a track.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember where Dad built the new house. June Shaw and the Kalsnai girls, it was opposite Shaw's was this, you know, large paddock. And it was all sort of 6 foot high gorse. And somebody had cleared a bit. And I do remember they had a huge great bonfire up there one year. And all the locals went. And halfway through the evening, we had a sudden downpour, put out the fire, and we ran like mad. And so it was funny, really, that years later Dad bought that piece of land, and he still had to clear it from gorse.
Yeah.
Well, I think he leased it from Mr. Shaw. No, he leased it from somebody. And then, so he started clearing it from gorse. He used it just as grazing, and then he was able to buy it later on.
Mm-hmm. Then there was that bonfire or sprouting. It was all very little, and suddenly there was rain. And was there lightning?
Yes, there was. There was lightning too. Yeah. Isn't that funny how these little things come back?
You guys have cleared off, yeah.
Yes.
Do you think we've covered everything yet?
Yes, I hope we have, Anne.
Yeah. I think we've done a very good job.
Yes. Yes, it says here that the... his involvement in local government bring changes to the family. I don't know whether it was local government or a lot, but we did meet some interesting people. Dad was a people's person,
yeah.
And we had all these, you know, people used to come out to the country for Sunday drive, and usually knew that they would get a cup of tea or something. And yes, so from there, and in later life, Dad had the tractor with a tray on the back. And someone from the council, I think it was, one of their friends, had put them on, and these, the Indonesian ambassador, and some of these, he used to bring his wife out, and she used to love, in her fur coat and high heels, she'd get on the box on the back of the tractor and be driven round the farm. And the old ambassador used to stay inside with Mum. But they just, you know, hadn't seen sort of country like that, and some they used to bring their friends out. I think it was, yeah. So we did meet some awfully interesting people through Dad. And he used to take a few people, they used to drive up to the top of Kaukau, which, you know, once the transmitting station was up there, they used to drive up there, which was supposed to be a no-no, but he'd ring John Hume and get John would tell him where to find a key, and they'd drive up there. And, you know, it was just a wee bit somewhere different to take people. In the early days of that thing, the local men from the valley used to drive up there and sit with the technicians and watch the direct import of rugby broadcasts.
Nobody else could get them?
I think it was delayed broadcast for the rest of New Zealand, but they used to go up there and get the, you know, straight off the line.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they got down again, because I think they used to take a bit of cheer up with them. And that was a shocking drive. Because that was quite big. They had to widen the road to get the traffic through, yes, from that goat track sort of thing, to get the traffic through up to the, you know, to even build Kaukau station.
Yeah.
They had to widen the road, so they took off, took land from Dad and land from John Hume. I remember Dad saying at the opening of that, they met Mr. Gilbert Stringer up there, and he and Jim Hume went up to greet him, and this man said, "You're the two people I didn't want to see today," because he was feeling guilty. They'd never paid for, hadn't even paid for the land. And the place was opened, and they'd never ever paid for the land that they'd taken. And I think, first of all, it was taken under public works, and Dad and Jim Hume protested about that because it was such a pittance that they thought they were entitled to a bit more. And
well, that's
I think that's it, Andy. That's great. Thanks.